My guest today is Christian from L1011. We're going to listen to some tracks from some of their new CDs. And by the way, you were just listening to Elegia from, probably mispronouncing that, from the Low Life album, New Order. And I was thinking of that because I was thinking about great instrumental music, and that's what you're about to hear right now. We're going to play some tracks and then do some interviews, so stick around. In the meantime, check out myspace.com/L1011. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. We're back on Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Christian from L1011. Let's make sure your mic is up.
Hello.
Yeah, that sounds right. How's it going, man?
It's going well. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for coming in.
Sure.
Why don't we just start with the basics? Tell me about who is in this group. There's a lot of different sounds. It sounds like a big group, but it's really not.
There's only two of us. There's me, and I play, like on that song you just heard there, I'm playing a double neck guitar, and one of the necks is a bass, the other neck is a six-string guitar, and I play them both at the same time. And I also use looping pedals to loop something, then play something on top of that, and then loop that, and then it's very confusing. You kind of have to see it live to understand. And then there's one other guy, Tim Fogarty, who's not here right now, who's drummer, and he plays electronic drums and acoustic drums, and he'll loop some of his stuff live also sometimes.
Do you feel like sometimes there's sort of a shortage of limbs?
Yes. I definitely could use some more limbs. It's hard. Sometimes we're on stage and we just look at each other and we thought, why did we do this? This is really hard.
Did it start out as something simple as like you know, you on a guitar and him on the drums, and then you just started adding layer after layer after layer?
Yeah, basically, I'm actually a bass player, so it started with me and him, and we were thinking we would get another musician, or two maybe. And I knew in my head what I wanted the music to kind of sound like, but Tim had just been to see John Bryan down at Largo or whatever, and he does the looping thing too by himself. It's actually pretty amazing. If you ever see it, he'll sit down at the drum set and loop a drum beat, then go over the piano, loop a piano part, then go over and play bass, and then he'll sing on top of it, and it's kind of unbelievable. And Tim had mentioned that. He said, you know, why don't we try one of those looper pedals, and maybe you could just loop something and then play on top of it. So I borrowed a looper pedal from a friend, and it kind of worked, and we had the little zzz, zzz, zzz in our heads.
Did you know immediately that, you know, that you were going to be good at the looping thing?
I didn't know if I was going to be good at it, but we got really excited about the idea of it just being two guys, and that's when we started really working at it. And it was hard. It's a musician has to be very accurate with his or her timing in order to use a looping pedal, or the tiniest little mistake can get worse and worse exponentially as the loop repeats itself.
If you don't get that first loop right, you can't go back and redo it during a live performance.
Yeah,
huh?
Yes, that's true. And if the timing of the loop is just a little too long or a little too short, that error magnifies itself as the loop continues. So it's hard.
Is there anything you can do during a performance to kind of, you know, if you feel it sort of unraveling, to kind of pull it back together? Can you, like, loop something else that makes the first mistake a little less glaring? Or?
Well, we've tried that, and it seems to make things just worse and worse. And my friends who have come and seen us a lot say they like it when we make mistakes, because it's sort of like, one of my friends said it's like watching a tightrope walker walking across, you know, up really high between buildings. And he's balancing there. If he just goes straight across and makes it, it's not really that exciting. But if he starts to lose his balance and almost fall, then it's really exciting. So
we're a sick species, huh?
Very sick, very sick.
Well, we were chatting a little bit before about your band not playing live here in the studio, because
right.
There's so many different elements to it.
Right.
So the upside of that is we get to listen to more music that you've recorded and brought in for us. So why don't
right.
we jump into...
Sure.
Another track from the CDs you brought in. Tell me what you brought in, first of all. I have two CDs here.
Right. The track we just heard was the first song on our new CD, which is called Every Direction is North. The track we heard was 3+4, and that's just in reference to I'm actually playing in 3, and Tim, my drummer, is playing in 4. So it's a polyrhythm thing, very nerdy. And then the next track, well, we could probably play track 3 off the new one if you want. It's called Hot Cakes, and it's... that's actually a reference to my wife. I can explain more later.
Nice. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is L1011. Stick around. And we're back on It's Good on killradio.org, hanging out with Christian from L1011, listening to some tracks from the new album.
Every direction is north.
Every direction is north.
Help you out there.
You know, it's funny, I'm like reading this, and the way it's packaged, it's kind of, you can't tell which side is up, you know, goes with the title.
You got it,
very
man.
Clever packaging. You confused the DJ.
Yeah.
So did you know when you decided you were going to start a musical act, did you know you wanted it to be an instrumental one?
Yes, because I can't sing, so and I wanted to be the leader. So I've been in enough bands where I wasn't the leader, which is fine. I totally enjoy that. I'm in another band called the Softlights, which I love, and I love being in that band, but I'm not the captain of the ship, mm-hmm. and I kind of like being the captain of the ship.
Are you the captain of this ship, or is it a...
Yeah. I mean, it's not to... I mean, Tim is definitely, you know, a big part of it, too, so it's not just... all my ideas.
But you're sort of the catalyst of the, you know, what gets created in the Petri dish. And
yeah, they're mostly my ideas. And stuff. Uh-huh. But I really can't sing. I mean, it's bad. It's bad how bad I am at singing. So
did you put a lot of thought into, you know, the fact that, you know, as an instrumental act, you're going to have different challenges in the indie music scene than the guy, you know, who's up there wailing on the microphone?
Yeah, definitely thought a lot about that. Our take on it is, especially in the sort of post-rock, which we get lumped into that category, which is fine, is that we don't approach our songs like other bands who are post-rock, I don't think, like Explosions in the Sky or God's Beauty, Black Emperor or whatever. We get compared to those bands a lot. Because those bands, their songs are 10 minutes long and really expansive and ambient. And we approach our songs more like pop songs. And we try to make them catchy and still indie rock and arty or whatever and cool, but really kind of pop songs that hopefully will hold people's attention in it. And none of our songs, or not very many of our songs, are more than 4 minutes long or something. And that's by design, because we just, as listeners, enjoy songs that frankly are catchy, and mm-hmm. we don't have a problem with that. So we're sort of combining two things, the sort of post-rock... anti-music business, whatever it is, with pop music, and I don't know if we're succeeding, but that's what's in our heads.
So when you're writing a song, you know, focusing on things like beginning, middle, and end, mm-hmm. and sort of capturing, do you think of each song as telling a story? Like with a lot of instrumental music, it is like what you describe, these 10-minute long journeys of mm-hmm. of emotion, where, you know, the artist is really just trying to get the audience to feel something.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like in your songs, because it has that pop structure, you're really taking them on a quicker ride, telling them more of a beginning, middle, end kind of story.
That's well put, and that's true. Each one of the songs is a story, and there are meanings behind every song, and no one would ever know what they are unless they hear me being interviewed on Kill Radio or whatever, and I talk about it. But I have in my head inspirations for each one of the songs, usually. Not always, but usually. And it's usually about something. It's usually a soundtrack to something in my life. And hopefully I'm imparting the emotion I feel from that to the people who are listening, and they're getting it, hopefully. And if not, that's okay. But that's what I'm trying to do.
You were saying this last time we listened to was about your wife.
Yeah, the whole record's really about my wife, mostly. Her favorite color is green. You know, the album's green. Every Direction is North is in reference to her inability to know in what direction she's traveling while she's driving.
The same problem with my wife. I really do.
So you understand. So she'll be driving, say, west, and she'll turn right, which would take her south, and she feels like she's turning north. And then if she takes...
Wait, if she's traveling west and she turned right,
that would take her north.
Yeah.
See, I'm the one who's screwing up. If she's driving west and then she turned left, I should say, that would be south.
Right.
But she feels like she's gone north. And then if she takes another left, which would send her east, she feels like that's north, too.
Yeah.
So she always feels like she's heading north, which I think is adorable.
Have you ever taken her to Amsterdam?
Oh, no.
Because that's a circular city. So if you're going in any one direction, eventually you are going north.
That would probably be a perfect... She'd probably
know
exactly where she's going.
It's the most confusing city in the world. She'd probably be able to show you how to get around, because I couldn't figure it out when I was there.
She would totally get it there.
All right, so... what is it in these songs? Like, if you're writing these songs, like that last one specifically about your wife, are you taking certain kinds of instruments and saying, oh, this makes me think of my wife, and that's what makes the song that way? Or is it certain kinds of of musical movements?
It's more the latter. It's not the instruments so much, although sounds are really important, but mostly I'm just using that double neck. Although on the next record, it's probably all going to be fretless bass and no double neck. But when I think about something like my wife, for example, in that last song, I'm thinking specifically about a mood, and I'm trying to capture that mood through the music. And the instruments hopefully will reflect that, or the sounds I get, because I use a ton of effects. So it's more of that than actually thinking, I think I'll use a clarinet on this one, because I don't. I've limited myself to just the double neck, sort of on purpose to challenge myself. That's why, like in the next record, I've already done two records with the double neck, so the next record I think is going to only be a fretless bass guitar, and that's it, which is really challenging. And it might not work, and maybe there will end up being double neck because I'll give up.
Now, how did you discover this unusual double neck instrument?
You know, it's really stupid. When we first started the band, I was using both a bass guitar and a regular guitar, and I would loop a bass line, and then I would run over, grab a guitar, loop the guitar, then set the guitar down and pick up the bass again and add a bass part. So I was going back and forth, and it was a pain. And I was watching VH1 Classic one night, and there was a Genesis video on, an old Genesis video, and the guy was using a double neck. It was a guitar-based double neck. I thought, oh, that's it. That's what I need, is something like that. I could just flip a switch and have the guitar, flip the switch and have the bass. And so I went on eBay, and I found a double neck, and that's it. Now that's my main instrument.
Nice. And you said your first instrument was just the bass.
Bass. Yeah, I've been playing bass for a long time. I've been in many bands just playing regular bass, not double neck.
What drew you to the bass as opposed to, you know, because actually it's interesting. You talk about being the, you know, wanting to be the captain of the ship.
Right.
And yet the bass player is usually the, you know, in the band as
right.
opposed to the man of the band. I mean, there's some exceptions, but.
Right. Well, my problem is that I always try to do things differently when it comes to things that are artistic, or when I'm trying to be artistic. I don't know if I ever am. And I thought it would be cool to take an instrument like bass and make it the lead instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably a really dumb idea, but that's what I had in my head, and I was really turned on by people. Like, you were playing New Order earlier, and people like Peter Hook, who did that. You know,
he was famous for playing a bass
a lead instrument, which I loved. And there's other people who have done that who I think are great, and I thought, okay, that's what I want to do, because I love bass. I love it when it's in its more, you know, traditional role too, but I thought I wanted to take the bass and I want to kind of make it the lead instrument. And I would try to do that in a lot of the bands I was in, and sometimes the other people in the band weren't that happy about that.
Right.
Sometimes they were cool with it, and I thought, well, why don't I just have my own band, so then there'll be no problem. And there you go.
All right, well, let's listen to another track from some of the music you brought in. What do you recommend?
You know what? Just pick one at random. They're all good.
Random it is. How about Living on Credit Blues? I can relate to that one.
Okay.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is L1011. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is L1011. Check out myspace.com/L1011. Is that your main web presence right now?
Yes.
So what is the significance of the name L1011?
Oh, it's just an airplane. I'm kind of an airplane nerd, which is silly, but I just love airplanes and helicopters. Yes, I'm a nerd. An L1011 is an old passenger plane. It was L, the letter L, 1011, L stood for Lockheed. Mm-hmm. And we changed it to EL, like Spanish, because we live basically in Spanish culture out here. And
right.
I love it. You know? And also, we didn't really want to get sued by Lockheed. So there's really not much meaning. It's just a name.
Is Los Angeles a part of your music in any way? Does it the city influence your writing, you think?
I think it has to. I mean, it's probably some sort of osmosis, but... I've never written a song specifically about Los Angeles, but I'm sure it's a part of what we do. If we were on a tropical island somewhere writing this music, I have a feeling it would probably sound different. But
it would have a steel drum in it somewhere.
Yeah.
Let's talk about performing live. Describe for me, if you can, the first time you went up on stage as L1011.
Okay. We actually were opening for ourselves in San Diego. Both Tim and I, play in another band called the Soft Lights. And the Soft Lights were playing in San Diego, and we were going to be the opening act. Sounds kind of silly, opening act. But we were really nervous because of all this looping stuff, and it actually went really well, and the crowd loved it. And that's when we thought, okay, maybe we did make the right decision doing this, because we really felt like we actually kind of weren't ready. But it had been long enough that we had been not playing out, and we thought, you know what, we just need to take a gig and just do it, force ourselves and just push ourselves. As uncomfortable as it may be, we got to push ourselves and just do it. And we did, and it worked. So that's what we have continued to do, like with putting out this record. They're keeping things that would keep us from wanting to put it out. There's a lot of stuff on there that we cringe when we hear. But at some point, as an artist, you have to stop.
Right.
Stop tweaking and just put it out there to the world and hope that you get it right on the next one. You know what I mean?
Right. And I guess you have to let go of the fact that it sounds different to other people than it does to you.
Right.
So
they don't know what I was trying to achieve.
Yeah.
I do, though. Oh.
Do you guys see yourselves as more live performers or recording artists? Is there anything that is more than the other in this act?
I personally don't see us one over the other, but I've come to learn that I think we're more of a live act, just how people react. Because there's something about seeing two guys, one of whom is using a double neck and doing all the looping and stuff, that people, even if they're not really that into our style of music, tend to be, I can't think of another word, but sort of amazed. I don't mean that in a conceited way at all, but just people haven't seen that.
Stunned,
before.
Struck
yeah,
with
yeah,
awe.
Maybe that's better. I'm not saying that we're great or anything. It's just unusual to see.
Right. I mean, it is something that people haven't seen before,
yes.
Generally.
So we tend to get more of a reaction live than we do from our records, which is fine. Our goal, though, is to make music that people would like, even if they didn't know how we were doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And we want people to think it's good. And then when they come see us, say, oh my gosh, I didn't realize just two of you do that, and you did it with looping and blah, 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 which does happen. So, but to get back to your question that you asked 20 minutes ago, I think that we are probably more of a live band than a records band, but I take each as seriously as the other.
Is there a sort of frame of mind that you have to get into when you're performing live? Because you have to, you know, it's not like if you're the bass player in a band, you just got to focus on the bass, you got to listen to the drums, make sure you're doing what you
right.
what you practice. But in your case, you have to do the part of many different characters
yes.
at the same time. Do you have to psych yourself out in some way to achieve this mentally?
Yes, it's not really psyching out as much as it is just really concentrating. Because I find if I allow myself to focus on somebody in the crowd or something that's wrong with the monitors or the lights or whatever, I tend to make mistakes. Because there's a lot to remember when we're doing this. Because switching instruments and looping and doing different pedals and everything has to be done at exactly the right moment. And if I'm not concentrating, sometimes I'll miss one of those little moments and something will get screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I mentally sort of slap myself and say, focus, focus. And it's hard because I want to technically concentrate on what I'm doing, but also allow myself to just get into the spirit and feel the music and have it sort of, not to sound corny, but have it be sort of a spiritual experience, which music is. So I keep saying this over and over, but it's hard. It's hard being in this band. But I love it. We love it. We love doing it.
And do the two of you have to communicate with each other on stage?
Yes.
To make it work?
Yes, and we've established ways of communicating that the audience would never know, but we're sending little signals to each other that we won't divulge, but see if you can figure it out the next time you come to a show.
Excellent. On that note, let's listen to another track. Why don't we play something from the from your first album?
Sure.
What track would you recommend from this first album?
You can just play the first one.
And this was a self-titled album, and you actually had a label on this one.
Yeah, we were signed to a label called Bar None that's out of New York. They probably most well known for, they were the ones who signed They Might Be Giants back in the day. And they've had a bunch of cool indie rock bands. They found us, and we had actually already made the record, but they just took it and licensed it and released it, which was cool. And we didn't put out this new one on that label, but
This new one you're releasing on your own, or you're
releasing
with another
it on
label?
Our own. We wanted to try doing it on our own, and we may regret that. I don't know, but it's an experiment. We'll see how it goes.
Well, that seems to be a running theme in your act is experimentation. And
yeah.
So I say go for it. All right, we're gonna listen to the first track from their self-titled debut album, L1011. My guest is L1011. You're listening to Is Good on KillRadio.org.
Thank you.
And we're back on It's Good on killradio.org, hanging out with L1011. We were chatting a little bit while we were listening to that song about live drums and drum loops and electronic music and acoustic music. And you know, you guys have this... There are other acts that have tried to combine this electronic world with this live world, but it's generally more, it's more of a dance act or a synth pop kind of thing.
Right.
It's not usually what post rock or whatever they're calling this instrumental thing.
Yes. Right.
Did you know when you started this that you were going to employ electronic elements as well as, I mean, besides the loops themselves, I mean, things like drum pads and things like
yes.
that.
Yes. In fact, the reason I chose Tim, I mean, one of the main reasons I chose Tim to be my drummer was because he had an electronic drum set. And I thought that was really freaking cool. And no one else was doing it. I mean, I'd never seen somebody using electronic drums, or no one that I knew of. I'm sure there probably were people out there doing it. But he and I had played together in a project that never quite took off, and he was playing electronic drums. And I loved his playing skills as well, of course. But the fact that he was using electronic drums was... I mean, this band is obviously all about sort of pushing the envelope, but not, you know, trying to push it too far so it's just noise and people don't understand.
Right.
But that, I thought that was perfect. You know, electronic drums and, excuse me, and then it ended up combining electronic drums with acoustic drums too. And you're right, like, really normally you only hear that in dance music, but we tried to bring that element to whatever it is we do, and hopefully it worked, but the funny thing about what you just said is I think the next record that we're going to do is going to be kind of dance-oriented.
Yeah, more. Well, it opens you up to another audience as well. I mean, right now, I mean, do you have a sense of what kind of audience you have? My guess is you attract more of an indie rock audience than, you know, than an electronic audience. Is that true?
Yes, I think that's true. And it's really, just from going out and touring and playing shows, I really like our audience. Our audience tends to be really, and it's, it sounds like a dumb thing to say, but really smart people. I mean, really, the people who come up after the show and talk and stuff, generally speaking, seem to be really, really smart, artistic people. And we get emails from all over the world. It's really cool. I mean, we're living in an interesting age. I get emails from the Philippines and Japan and in Europe and Iceland. And this kid just emailed me this morning saying he wanted to remix one of our songs. He's from Iceland.
Wow.
I'm like, that's so cool.
And these are people who are, I guess, listening to your album. Are they downloading it from iTunes, or where are they getting...
Yeah, we've been selling it. We just released it ourselves a week ago or 2 weeks ago, and they've been buying it from the actual CD from CD Baby, which is a website that helps musicians sell. So please go to cdbaby.com/L1011 too and buy a record. And we've been selling a bunch of copies, and they've been going out. I get the little emails as to where these CDs are going, and they're going all over the world. So I don't know how people are finding out about us, but they are. And they're also downloading it on iTunes, and I'm sure there's a lot of people just stealing it on the Internet because that's part of this these days.
Awesome. You guys recently went on a tour, right? I know you were out of town recently doing a couple of gigs.
Yeah, we were out of town on tour with our other band, the Softlights. We were opening for Wolf Mother, which was interesting.
So were you doing L1011 during that, or just the Softlights?
We didn't have time. That was just Softlights.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Now, you have a couple of gigs coming up, though. I checked out.
Yes, we're playing in L.A., let's see, August 8th, I think it is, at Tangier. That's a 21 and up show. Then August 10th in Pasadena at No Future Cafe, which is all ages. And then September 10th in Tucson, for those of you out in Tucson, which is one of our favorite places to play, we'll be at Plush with Maserati. So that'll be fun. And we, depending on our schedule with our other band, we may be doing some more tour dates around that Tucson show, but we'll see.
Now, you know, being in a band and doing your own thing, these are both very time-consuming and mentally draining activities. Like, how are you able to balance these two worlds of being in a band and also being your own band?
I'm really not. I'm not good at it.
Do you feel like one is going to have to take precedence over the other eventually?
Well, no, I'm hoping not. So far, so good. Like, both bands have sort of been leapfrogging each other, so to speak. In other words, one band's album cycle will be happening while the other's is sort of over. So right now, we're really in the middle of an album cycle for the Softlights. So we're sort of focusing our energies there, even though we did just release this record, this L1011 record, but we won't be able to really tour and really support it until sort of the Soft Light stuff mellows out. In fact, we're kind of thinking of this record more as a holdover record. Not that it's artistically any less relevant, but as a holdover record. And then when we do the third one, we'll be free from Soft Light's requirements and be able to go out and really hit
to
it.
To focus all your energy on that third
yes.
one. And
it's hard. It's really hard being in two bands, actually. It's harder than I thought it would be. But so far, so good, and hopefully we can keep doing it. Because I love both bands, so.
And you're playing bass in the other band?
Yeah, right. Playing bass.
Is
just
that kind of a
bass.
Relief for you to like kind of go in? Is it in a sense, is it easier for you?
It is. It's much easier. I feel when I go up on stage, it's honestly, it's more fun. It's still work, but it's just now having figured out the whole double neck thing and coming, you know, I've basically invented techniques in order to do some, not that I'm some genius or anything, but out of necessity, I've come up with some techniques. So to go back to playing bass, which is what I'd been doing for 20 years anyway, it's like, ah, oh, this is,
right.
I'm used to this. This is normal.
And I meant to ask you before when we were talking about electronic music and live drums, when you guys are recording, it's, I wouldn't think it quite as necessary to jump around and do all the looping that you have to do in order to achieve the same sound live.
That's right.
So when you record, is it a little bit easier? Do you lay down the electronic drum track and then you go back and play the live drums over it instead of having him have to, you know...
To loop it?
Do it, yeah, at the same
live.
Time?
Yeah, yes, that is how we do it. And it's interesting you ask that because we just had a conversation the other day because we started recording some new stuff about how... We found that our recordings don't have as good a feel as the songs do live, and it's because we do it how you just described. We actually do it in a more traditional way. Like, I'll play the guitar part that normally live would be looped, but I'll play it, and then on a separate track, I'll record a bass part.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but normally that's all looped together live, and we think it may have made us a little bit more sterile sounding on our records. So we were thinking on the next record, we might actually just play live and just record it.
Wow.
Which is scary because this live, if there's a small mistake, nobody notices it really. But on a record, the smallest mistakes sound huge. They're very magnified when you listen back. So we're kind of scared, but that might be what we do next.
Yeah, and the recording on the record too. That's what the song becomes afterwards. You know,
yes.
when people
yes,
think
point.
Of that song, if a song becomes famous or whatever, you know, that's yes. what you really mean when you say, "Oh, I love the song," is you mean you love that one recording of the song,
the photograph of where it was that day.
Yeah,
yeah. Which is actually, in a way, I like that because I know, as a fan of music, when I go see bands live, if they play everything just exactly how it is on their record, I find that to be really boring. I like it when they change it up a little
sure,
bit.
Sure. Yeah.
And so. Hopefully when people see us live, we do change it slightly. I mean, not hugely, but it will have a different, more exciting feel, hopefully.
Let's go listen to some more music.
Okay.
Let's go. We'll go back to the new album.
Okay.
And we'll just pick a random track.
Sure.
Let's see. I'm going to do it just by titles.
Okay.
The 49th Day, that'll work for me.
All right.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. Check out myspace.com/ELTENELEVEN. That's L-10-11. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is L1011. Speaking of live performances, are there certain kinds of venues you guys prefer to play in as opposed to other ones?
You know, it's funny. I would think that I would really like the big, fancy, nice venues, but we tend to have our best shows at the crappy dives, and I don't know why.
Is it the intimacy? Is it like having the audience close to you? Or
I think it must be, because when we've played bigger places, we tend to have a lot of problems. I don't know why, if we're psyching ourselves out or what it is, but we tend the ones where we really feel good, where we come off stage with that burning feeling, they're just like, oh God, we killed it, and you can't calm down, that kind of feeling. It always seems to be when we've played at some, watch my language, some, oh no, this is internet radio.
Oh yeah, go for it.
Some shithole. Take that, FCC. My preference, I guess that, so yeah, I guess my preference is a vibey little crappy place. Even though it's fun to play in front of, we've played in front of some huge audiences, and that's great too, because that's a rush to be in front of all those people. But we generally don't seem to play as well when we're in those situations.
Well, I guess also in a bigger venue, it's harder for the audience to see what you're doing and why it's so
true.
Impressive. I mean,
that's
I saw a picture on your MySpace of your bandmate like using his drumsticks and banging them on your guitar.
Yeah, yeah, that's
you know,
actually,
and if I was in the 3,000th row, I probably wouldn't
probably
get how cool
what,
that is.
Why is that guy kneeling in front of the other guy? Is this a gay band? What is this?
Exactly.
That's actually the ending of that song, 3+4, just for those nerdy people out there like me who are taking notes.
Have you seen L1011 build up an audience like since the first show? Do you see a lot of repeat faces at shows? And
yes.
Sort of an L1011 following?
Yes, and that's, you know, we were talking about this earlier, like our fans are so cool. Like they're very, a lot of our fans are very dedicated and, you know, come to every show, and we kind of become friends with them because they're all so cool. They're so not groupie, like not weird, you know. I've been in other bands that had fans who, once I started talking to them and I was actually kind of nice, then they got really weird and started following me around and that sort of thing. And L1011 is not like that. Like, our fans are so nice, and so I keep saying this, but they seem really smart, and they know when it's time to say, okay, well, it was good to talk to you, and
right,
don't try to follow me home.
Doesn't make you, you know, personal friends. It makes you positive acquaintances. Yeah.
Yes, yes, exactly. And actually, some of them actually have become friends, and that's great. You know, what a great way to meet people. You know, it's common ground, sort of.
Talking about the future of L1011, what is it that you want to make sure you guys don't end up doing? I mean, you're not going to fall into the same pitfalls as a lot of indie rock bands simply because you're not doing the same kind of music as a lot of indie rock
right.
bands. But I would imagine even in the genre that the unidentifiable genre that you're in,
right.
there's got to be some pitfalls where, you know, you get lazy about this thing or you try this fad
right.
or something
right.
like that. Are you aware of any of these things, and are you trying to make sure that you don't do that?
Very much so. I think it's really bad for artists, in any, whether it's a musician or a sculptor or whatever, I think it's really bad for artists to repeat themselves. And it's actually really hard not to do. And I hope we don't repeat ourselves. I don't want every record of ours to be so different from the other that people have no idea who we are and we don't have an identity or something.
Well, you have to find that happy medium, because you also have your fans who are expecting you to do the certain things that got them interested in your music.
It's true, and I like the idea of challenging fans. I mean, that's why, like I was saying earlier, this next record, I probably won't use the double neck because I've already done two records with it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean I'll never use it again, but right now I'm feeling something different. It's like when Bob Dylan went electric, you know? Like he
and
lost
Kiss
a lot of
took
his
off their makeup.
Kiss took off their makeup, yes. But those kind of things, I mean, is I'm obviously not comparing our band to those people, and but they did lose a lot of their fans when they did those things, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's awesome. Not because you should flip off your fans, but because you should keep pushing forward, I think, and keep challenging yourself and your fans.
Well, and they probably earned other fans, you know, who are more in tune with their music anyway.
Right.
Instead of just following something that was popular.
And if they didn't, or if we don't, then that will kind of feel bad. But in a way, I won't care, because I know I did what I thought was right. And L1011 will hopefully always be honest. We'll be honest about what we're doing. So if you don't like what we're doing, that's totally cool. We can still be friends. But I'm speaking, I'm doing quotes right now, speaking in quotes, honestly to you through my music. Oh, God, that sounds corny. But you get the idea.
Yeah. But seriously, you can't be friends if you don't like your music. Let's be honest.
We are not friends anymore. Once we've broken up, we're not going to see each other. We'll have that awkward thing, you know, at our friend's wedding where we're like, oh, hey, how you doing?
How successful do you think L1011 can be? I mean, I know it's you don't want to set impossible standard for yourself, but you know, it not being a, you know, a teen pop act, you know, that's going to, you know, be on, you're not going to be able to avoid it. It's going to be on billboards and everything like that.
Right.
I mean, where do you say, where will you be able to say, okay, L1011 has really achieved its peak? Is it going to be with something like a presentation at the Hollywood Bowl, or do you need to be on the front cover of Rolling Stones?
Either of those things would be fine. I mean, my goal, when I envision in my head what we what it would be possible for us to do, and maybe this is unrealistic, but I look at bands like Explosions in the Sky, as we talked about before, or Sigur Rós or Tortoise or whatever. Those are bands that are making music that is not mainstream. That's pretty freaking weird music. Beautifully weird. Great weird. That music I love. And those bands are big. I mean, they play big venues. And maybe I'm deluding myself, but I think that L1011 could be like that. And I hope that L1011 is like that. If we're not, that's okay. I won't be disappointed. If we play clubs the rest of our career, that's okay. It's like I said before, we're being honest with our music here. So if there aren't enough people out there who would get it to make it so we can play Hollywood Bowl, that's okay. Because that just means we're making music that's really obscure that people don't get.
Right.
And that's okay. But I would love it if we were at a level, you know, up from where, say, clubs or whatever, if we were playing theaters and stuff. Because I think we would actually eventually, I think we would be better in that kind of environment. I think it could actually be really cool.
And then future generations would, you know, have you in their influences list, you know, when they talk about their music.
And they actually already do. I've actually, oddly enough, seen it. And when I'm, you know, bored at 2 a.m. looking around on the internet, we are listed as bands influence. In fact, there's some bands who are trying to, I get these emails from bands who are trying to cover our songs, which is such a compliment. They don't even realize. And they've emailed me asking how I play certain parts in songs.
Wow.
And I tell them, you know, I try to help them out. And that just gives me the warmest feeling inside. It sounds corny, but I just think that's so cool.
It is cool. And on that note, we're just about out of time. My guest has been Christian. Thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, thank you for having me.
My guest has been L1011. Check out myspace.com/L1011. When are your next gigs again? I know they're coming up soon.
Yeah, August 8th, Tangier in L.A. August 10th, Pasadena, No Future Cafe. That's all ages. And September 10th with Maserati in Tucson at Plush.
All right. And let's leave with one more track from either of these CDs. I'm going to let you pick it.
Okay, let's do... How about, let's do the title track, Every Direction is North, which is track 2 on the new one.
You've been listening to Is Good on killradio.org with my guest, L1011. You can download this episode of the show from myspace.com/thisisgood and isgoodmusic.com. It'll be up later today, as well as podcast on iTunes. I'll be back tomorrow.